Move into Columbia River. This is, let me read the official, where are we? Review of Lower Columbia River Sturgeon Management Policy, C-3001, briefing and public hearing. We have Cindy LaFleur and Brad James.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Cindy LaFleur. I'm the Region 5 Fish Program Manager down in Southwest Washington. With me is Brad James, our Sturgeon Manager. And so what we're going to talk about today is we're going to give you the annual update, which is included in your policy. We're going to go over a bunch of different topics. And then your policy for sturgeon management expires. And so we want to talk to you about a new policy for 2014. So that's the purpose, which I just said. And just as a reminder, the population that we're talking about is the population below Bonneville Dam. These fish also migrate out into the ocean, go down the Oregon coast, up the Washington coast. They're harvested in Grays and Willapaw and even in Puget Sound. It does not include the population above Bonneville Dam. That's a separate population, and that's not included today. So these are the topics for the annual review: stock status, predation, in-season fishery management, fish left unharvested or over-harvested, harvest outside the Columbia, bycatch in our fisheries, any recommendations, and other information, and then review of the policy. So on our population assessment tools, we have two different methods that we're looking at. They're both mark recapture method. One looks at the historic method, looks at mark recaptures, tags from fisheries, and we get the results about 15 months later. So that estimate is a year behind. The set line estimate uses set lines out in the fishery, so we get those estimates the year of the year of the population, the same year as the population. It's two different methods. One's been in place a lot longer. We also look at the sport fishery catch per unit effort as an indicator, and we look at the sub-yearling index. So this is the population estimates, and in your packet, you're missing one of these numbers. And I'm just wondering if I could get you to write that in. It's in the attachment. It's in the attachment one, and it's this big packet of all of those information. And it's in table one of that packet. And what's missing, what we didn't have at the time we provided this to you, is the 2014 projected estimate in the blue. So that's 131,700. Everyone with me? So this table shows the historic method, and we just went back to 2009 in the left-hand side. And then the set line method. With the set line method, we have a projection, so a forecast is the way I look at it, as well as the estimate of the year. And then on the far right is the harvest guideline. So in 2013, of course, we don't have the historic method because that we get that a year later. So in 2013, the set line method projected a population of 74,000. Oh, I have to say, these are legal size fish. These are the legal size population. There's fish below this and above this. This is just the legal size group. So in 2013, the projection was 74,300, and that was what the harvest fisheries, that was what fisheries management was based on. That estimate. The actual return or the actual population came in a bit higher than that at about 114,000. And then in 2014, The projection for next year's population of legal fish is 131,700. And what I talked about with the Fish Committee members the other day was the set line method is new. It hasn't been in place that long. And I'm gaining some comfort from it. When I look at the 2011 line and the 2012 line and I compare the set line method with the historic method, either the projected number or the actual number, they're all fairly close to each other. They're not hugely different. And the other thing I noticed about the set line projection was the projected numbers are, in all cases, less than the estimate after the fact. So you can look at it, I can look at it as a conservative estimate, which is a good thing, to underestimate. It depends on your perspective, but in terms of conservation, it underestimates, so that if you're harvesting on the projected number and there's really more fish, your harvest is on the conservative side. That makes sense.
Anything else on this?
Sure. Commissioner Mankin.
Do we know where these fish are really coming from? I mean, you talked about them being the same population in Puget Sound as well as the Columbia River and in the Oregon coast, but isn't there some genetic information out there that shows that they're probably even related to the Sacramento stocks? I mean, some genetic differences out there. And if that is the case and these fish are migrating, not necessarily consistently with just a few migrating, but maybe they're migrating in large groups, could that not be indicated in this kind of a projected population size?
Go ahead.
So, yes, there is the potential. Biologists up and down the coast do tag sturgeon in their population. So tagged fish are being tagged, down in the Sacramento area, and similarly fish are being tagged up in the lower Fraser River. And we're tagging our fish. And so we at least try to measure, when we intercept a fish from another basin in these different areas. And by and large, it's typically a very low rate. And I would, so low that I couldn't begin to say if there's if there's been a big shift or something like that. We don't do like telemetry studies or something like that to track where the fish are going. So it's a area that we have some information, but not a lot.
One other question too is: are you going to talk about sea lion predation here?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
So, is it safe to say, Brad, that we think that there's not a genetic much genetic influence from these other populations from what we've seen of the tags of those fish?
Yeah, I would say that, they're relatively distinct populations. The Sacramento fish seem to spawn in the Sacramento River area. Our fish, seem to come back here to spawn. We're continuing to collect, or other researchers are continuing to collect additional genetic information, and we've at least collected samples from Puget Sound and our coastal estuaries to eventually get a better handle on this.
Yeah, I was aware of that, Okay, thank you.
Okay, this graph shows the trends in the... Oh,
Commissioner Carpenter has a question.
Could you go back to the previous slide just for a second? I want to do a follow-up to Commissioner Mankin's question. On the under set line method and projected, there's a 57,000 fish increase from 2013 to 2014. I guess from a layman's perspective, where do those fish come from? Were they in the ocean? They migrate in? Did they transition from up north? Did they follow the smelt in? I guess just some real basic ideas on why the uptick.
We're going to show. Let me double check here.
So we do have some information that we'll be presenting on, the portion of the population where these fish might have recruited from,
okay.
The Columbia River population, so the smaller fish.
So, yeah, we do have a slide a little later.
One second, though. You said smaller fish. You mean undersized fish or in the slot limit?
Fish... when they entered the slot limit might be like 11-year-olds. And so, how many 10-year-olds would have grown into the slot limit from 1 year to the next?
Oh, I got
that type of thing.
So we did expect this growth, as we saw in some previous graphs. I mean, not today, but in past years, we were expecting to see this. And so it's those smaller fish moving up into the legal size. And I think we can show that a little bit in a few slides. So this is the trend in the legal size abundance. And this is the pale boxes. It's the historic method because that's the only one we can go back in time on. And you can see that in the early 90s, we were in some low abundance levels and increased in the mid-90s and pretty much stabilized for about 10 years. And then in the late 2000s, we've had a dip down in the population. And then the green ones are the set line estimates, those green boxes. And again, you can see they compare pretty favorably with the historic method. And then the blue is the projection for 2014. So we're projecting to be on a slight uphill increase. And then this is the catch per unit effort for the sport fishery. Again, one of those trends that we look at in terms of the population. And for the legal fishery, or for the legal size fish, you can see that on that top graph, it's been fairly stable. Took a downturn 5-6 years ago, it looks like, and then it's creeping back up, going in the right direction. On the sublegal population, it's been fairly static for about 5 or 6 years. Maybe a slight, it looks like there's a slight uptick in 2013. And this is the over legal size fish, so the
over 60 inches, right?
This is the over 60 inch category, and this is the trends in the gorge. So the blue is the catch, and the yellow line is the CPUE, and you can see it's all declined. A lot of this is our management response. We've added to the sanctuary and time and area, but I also think in recent years it's due to fewer of these oversized fish being in that area. And this one is the same graph. It's not the same scale, but these are the oversized fish that are caught in the estuary. And again, you can see this one is sort of a different trend. Although the magnitude, so the catch rates are about, so on the one on the gorge, let me just go back. So your catch rates on the high side went up to 0.5 on the far right there. In this one, your high point is 0.1. So it's a different magnitude. And the other thing about this fishery is you can't really target as far as I know, the oversized fish in the estuary, it's too big. When you get up in the gorge, it's more narrow, and the fish are staging for spawning. But in the estuary, they're just hanging around and eating. And then this is the same graph for the Willamette. And again, the scale here is a lot different than it was in the gorge. But they have seen an increase in trend. And Brad has told me that part of this, we think, is these fish are redistributing a bit. They've gotten pressure up in the gorge from the sea lions, and they're redistributing. And Oregon Fish and Wildlife has put in a spawning sanctuary in the Willamette as well. I'm not sure if it may need to be modified, but they do have that in place in there. And that was recent, so that was good. This is the index of the subyearlings. So these are the, we call them zero-age fish. They are 1 year old?
They would be half a year old fish. Okay.
And so we call this an index. We really have not been able to tie this to the abundance or to the projected abundance. We're still kind of trying to get some trends. We didn't have sampling in 07. And this year's data isn't available yet because it's just got finished by Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. So what's the take-home message from this is I don't know, average numbers.
Yeah, I would say at this point in time, we don't know what would be considered good annual production. We weren't doing these types of surveys back in the 80s and 90s when we knew we were getting good production.
If we see something in the future from this 09, the big 09 piece, we might be able to start drawing some conclusions from that. So those will start getting caught in the set line data at age 5. And so maybe this year or next year we may see some of that. And so if we kind of see that, maybe that'll help us determine that. Growth rates is another thing we look at, and we've got some increasing trend on growth rate. Larry mentioned, Commissioner Carpenter mentioned smelt, and we have had some good smelt returns in the last few years, pretty strong. Those were a bit absent for a couple years. That's one of their food. Shad is another one, but I think they eat all kinds of things, freshwater clams and other things as well. But this is a good sign. And this is the graph I was talking about in terms of Commissioner Carpenter's question and moving. So this is the results of the set line data, and along the bottom is the length of the fish. And in between the two lines are the legal size abundant, or not the abundance, but the legal size fish. So if you follow the graphs down, you can see that each year there's more of that graph that's moving in between the two lines. And that's exactly what we saw with the abundance estimates of legal fish. This is just a sample, but so as that moves along, those fish are getting older and moving through the legal size category and up into the adult or the over legal size. And so then at the very left hand side of the graph, the 54 centimeter fish are about 5 years old, and then when they get to be legal size, it takes about 6 years to go from 54 into the legal size category. So, you know, you can see with the bumps and the downturns, I mean, there is a downturn at the 54. I mean, we don't know what's coming up there, but there is, when you go from 74 down to 54, we are looking for, that dip will occur in the legal size population down the road.
So I was going to ask Cindy to go back to the sport catch rate of sublegals, the flat line.
The green line here.
The lower green line, and then back up to the slide we just had. So the numbers of fish on the left side of the slide below the minimum legal size, and if you believe the catch rate information, then those should total to about the same number of fish. So if we're currently starting to recruit more fish to legal size, so at the right side of that interval, then they have to be in smaller numbers somewhere else in the interval, which we're suspecting is the left side, the smallest fish represented here. So as Cindy was saying, that would indicate we might expect for a drop-off then in some future years of recruitment to legal size.
Right, and so this graph shows that we do expect an upturn in 2013, and that you can see that, and then the fish following that will be coming, and that matches the 2014 projection, and maybe even into 2015. But at some point, you're going to get on the back side of the mountain.
So, what's the difference in total abundance within those three categories, or within those 3 years? There, do you have any estimate of the
Oregon generates these estimates. I don't happen to have estimates for the entire group for 2013 or 2012. When they do their mark recapture estimate, they include fish down to 6 inches smaller than legal size, and so I did have some information on that. So it's a broader group, but it's not the entire group.
We can probably get that for you. Okay. So now the next thing on. Can you hear me? Mm-hmm. Okay. The next thing on the annual review is predation rates. And this is white sturgeon up at Bonneville Dam. I think this is still the Corps of Engineers program that they've been doing. And the blue is the numbers of sturgeon that were preyed upon. And then line is the take per hour. And you can see that that's dropped off in 2013. Now we've got a harassment take program in place on the California sea lions. It's the Stellar sea lions that are primarily the ones that target sturgeon. So this could be, there's obviously some harassment and
This is for both,
right, Brad?
It is for both, but as Cindy alluded to, it's almost all occurring from stellar sea lion predation.
And then the next thing on your list of annual review topics is in-season management. So for 2013, the policy said the harvest rate should be 16%, and then you and Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife or Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission made some decisions to reduce that, and then the reduction was 15%. So for 2013, that harvest rate target was 13.6%. The other thing that was done was we reduced the annual limit in the sport fishery to from five down to two. That was effective May 1. And then the planned regulation for 2014 is to have no sturgeon retention below Bonneville Dam, along the Washington coast, in Puget Sound and all the tributaries, and it also along the Oregon coast. I mean, Oregon took
Commissioner Smith.
Same.
Cynthia, I don't know if you can answer this, but what would be your predictions in the next few years on the sea lion situation? I mean,
In the next few years, in terms of the stellars,
right,
I would predict not much difference. Now, there is some work. I'm not up on this, but I know there was some work being done to talk about delisting the stellar population. And if that occurs, then that would allow us to have potentially have some take of those. But I don't know what the status of that is, and because those things take so long, and then if we were going to pursue some potential take of those, I mean, that's why I'm saying in the next few years, even if something were to happen, I think it would take longer to get. But I don't know what the status of that is.
Yeah, it's kind of one that I didn't think it happened. I mean, nobody knows the answer, but just to follow up, what is the illegal take of those, or the killing of those illegally now? Do you see that number ratcheting up? Some of it gets into the popular press, but you know.
You mean by humans?
Yeah, right.
of the
sea lions.
Oh, I don't think very much is occurring.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean it. I don't know. I've heard of a couple cases, but. You know, you get up in the gorge, there's people and Corps of Engineers and fishers, and I don't know if I'd... You're going to have to shoot them if you're going to kill them.
Well, there's a few that just show up on beaches every so often with unexplained holes in them.
Right.
And I didn't know how rampant that was, but...
Floaters.
Okay.
So that was the fishery management. And then in terms of our fisheries in the Columbia, so the planned fishery for the estuary, for our sport fisheries, we had set a season from January through April 30, and then again May 11 to June 30. And that's the typical looking season for the estuary, two pieces. The early season happened as planned. The late season had higher harvest rates, more fish around. People were catching them faster, and we had to close that one early on June. So it went through June 20, and then above Wana in the Middle River, the January through June 15 fishery occurred as planned. But there's also a late season, mostly focused in October, and that did not occur because the harvest guideline had already been met. In the Willamette River, they had planned for 2 3-day seasons in July. Those occurred, and they were able to have a couple of more fisheries to catch their allocation. They had a February fishery a couple years ago, and it lasted a day or two. So they've moved their fishery into a time frame when there's not as many sturgeon in there so they could spread it out. It was successful last year. In the commercial fishery, the allocation is allocated. The guideline is allocated across the various fisheries, and so those pretty much occurred as planned, a little more here and there, a little less, and they caught their guideline. So this is a combined total here of all the fisheries. So in the estuary, the allocation was 4,000, harvested a few more than that, about 500 more because of the high catch rate. The sport fishery above Wana was allocated 2,000, just about caught all of that. In the Willamette, they caught fewer fish than their allocation. And so the sport total allocation, about 7,800, and the total actual harvest, about 7,900, so about 100 over. In the commercial fishery, those numbers are confusing me. 2021 was the allocation, and the harvest was 2012. So a little bit left. When you combine both fisheries, which is really what we're talking about, the allocation was 9,800, came in harvesting about 99, so about 100 more than the allocation, combined fisheries. And then in terms of harvest outside the Columbia River, this graph shows a little bit hard to differentiate the two, but generally harvest outside the Columbia has declined, as it has in the Columbia. In Gray's Willapa, we have a little trigger mechanism that goes with the Columbia, so it's just an automatic adjustment in those fisheries. And so the biggest green, that fat, the one on the bottom, is the tribal fishery. I believe that's the Quinault fishery, Willapa Gray's up there somewhere. In terms of bycatch, we did monitor the commercial fishery in 2012, and these are the numbers that were observed in the fall fishery out of 437 drifts, 64 legal kept, 71 legal released, 240 sublegals released, 52 over legal, and one green released. And we observed about just under 5% of the total number of landings. In addition to this, this was just the sturgeon. The fishery harvested about 37,000 Chinook, a little over 2,000 coho, and the total sturgeon harvest was about 1,400. That goes along with these numbers. In the recreational fishery, it's broken out by fishery, the estuary handled. So these are all released fish. There was also fish retained in the fishery, but these are just the released fish. So mostly sublegal size in all of those fisheries, around 48,000 legal size released, so either from catch and release or limit attained or whatever, about 4,300, and then around 4,000 oversize. And you can see the oversize release, it's lowest above Wana, which has that gorge fishery in it, and pretty high in the Willamette and in the estuary. So, ticking off on your annual review, we're down to recommended management changes. And what we're recommending today is that you consider a new policy. And let's see here. And I did want to spend a couple minutes just talking about that. And then for other information, just an update on where Oregon Fish and Wildlife is. Their commission adopted the two fish annual limit, same as we did here in Washington on May 1. And then the same retention prohibition. Their rules have the no retention beginning January of 2014, the same as our rules, and that includes their coastal areas. So both consistent with WDFW. And then if I could spend a minute and walk you through the changes that I proposed for your policy. And so you should have a pink. Mine's pink. No, I don't have anything. You should have a track changes version. And so I think it's a good policy. I don't think it really needs to be changed. I did not make any substantive changes. The yellow highlights, there's one on page 1, one on page 2, and one on page 3, was for clarification primarily. But what I did do is I reorganized it, and I moved some stuff in under the fishery management objectives. So some of the cross out on the bottom of page 2, that stuff was just moved somewhere else. But what I did delete is on page 2 in the middle, there's about, I don't know, 5 bullets there, which refers specifically to 2011 to 13. So I took that out, and the rest of it just kind of makes it more of a generic. It doesn't have the specifics for 2011 to 13. So, but everything else was just moved in there. And so it looks a little bit ugly, but Commissioner Schmitten was able to follow my logic in this the other night. So what we'd like to do is ask you to make any changes you would like to make, and then we would like to put this out for public review so that you could adopt it in January. I mean, it's... We wouldn't have a policy for 1 month, but, I mean, that would be good. And I think that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Questions for Cindy? Or Brian? If we give you the go-ahead to put this out for public comment, then and we adopt in January, we're not going to be able to have a hearing. Or we would have to decide right after the hearing. Is that
that's true?
Is that a problem? I mean, wouldn't people want to have us think about it? What would be the problem with adopting in February? Is the real question.
I don't see any problem with.
Okay, so maybe we should try to put it on our agenda for a public hearing in January, and have the decision in February.
Pardon? We have public today as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. But they haven't seen this.
Or they have not. We did provide our advisor groups, which we do that annual review packet. It's sent out every year, and but we did not do.
We really need to issue it in a formal sense for public comment, consistent with APA. So. No, we don't, because it's a policy? Okay. Well, technically we don't, but we like to. we like to be consistent with APA wherever possible. So any objection to releasing this draft policy? Any changes we want to make to it before it's released? Commissioner Mencken?
Yeah, Cindy, can you point out in the policy which of those bullets you were talking about that you eliminated?
Yes, on page 2.
Right.
And where under the subheading that says when retention fisheries are allowed.
Right.
And then the ones, 1, 2, 3, 4, the fourth bullet, the harvest level for 2011 to 13 is crossed off. Because it's not pertinent to...
And then all of the sub-bullets there were...
Yes.
I'm wondering if we shouldn't, express a little bit of concern about those processes, maybe not specifically for a given year, but those would be things that we would look at,
Right. When those things were added, well, let me say it this way. If you look on page 1 of your policy, it just depends on how specific you want to be. The second bullet under conservation objectives, managed with a precautionary approach due to uncertainties in population parameters. That pretty much can cover anything you want. the other thing, Commissioner Mankin, is the fishery management piece is done in an has been done in a in an accord with Oregon Fish and Wildlife. So any kinds of any kind of specific information for fishery management for a particular year or a set of years can be incorporated into that document.
I guess that's okay. Yeah. I haven't had a chance to really go through this, and maybe we'll have some comments, but I don't see a problem in issuing it and allowing the public to look at what you've got. How are you going to you're going to eliminate the red out, I mean the crossed out, the red cross outs on are you going to leave those in there for the public to see how different it is?
I don't know how to. I don't know exactly the best way to do that. I mean, you could do it both ways: a marked out version so that you can see the changes, or just have a complete new one.
Do the marked out version?
I don't know if we usually do it one way or the other. I think a clean version might be the way to go, just okay. So people can look at it
sure.
as it is.
Sure.
But. I guess let me ask another question that might reveal ignorance. One reason I thought that you had struck this language is because we don't intend to have a directed harvest. Now, are we still going to have to have a harvest, which is just the indirect and non-target incidental mortality? Are we going to account for that and set that as a harvest?
Yeah.
So I did. Part of the reason that I reorganized this was so that you could, so that your policy is good, and it doesn't matter if there's harvest or not harvest. And so I added that subsection that said when retention fisheries are allowed. Here's your allocation, and here's how you develop your those, which were in, was already in your policy, and so that was part of the reorganization. The details of the harvest fisheries are in have been incorporated into our fishery accords that we develop with Oregon, and it talks about dates and bag limits and size limits and all of those details. So that way, your policy should be able to stand alone whether or not there's retention fisheries or not.
Okay.
And it should cover the conservation objectives and the fishery management objectives when you have fisheries.
Okay. If we, and I don't know how we feel about having fisheries. I was just assuming we would continue the or maintain our commitment to no retention starting January 1st, 2014. That's the commitment we made in our policy, right? Correct?
Well, it wasn't in the policy. It was,
it's in the accord.
It's in the accord?
Right. Okay. It was okay. The two commissions and directors okay. made the decision and enacted it into rule.
Okay. I'm with you now. Okay, how about if we instruct Cindy to remove the strikeout, freshen, make it a clean copy, and put it out for public comment, have a hearing in January, and schedule adoption or the consideration for adoption in
One other question. Would it be efficacious to, when this is issued, when people get a look at this, have some sort of a preamble to say what the accord actually says? I mean, just a couple sentences.
Sure. I think I can do that.
Okay.
Okay, any other comments? Thank you.
Thank you.
Guys, safe travels home.
All right. We have just that last. Public testimony, public input on this item. Let's see, we've got a number of people signed up to testify, and I think you're all old hands. You've been here before. 3-minute rule. I'll call you up 2 at a time. Speak about 5 inches from the mic. We give you 3 minutes only. When you hear the beeping noise, please conclude your remarks. Robert Fallon and Harry Barber, please come forward.
Madam Chair, commissioners, and staff, my name is Robert Fallon. I represent the CCA of Washington, and we appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today about the Lower Columbia River white sturgeon harvest policy. We have witnessed in the past 15 years a dramatic decline in the white sturgeon population. The following statistics should raise some alarm. The estimate of legal-sized sturgeon dropped by almost 60,000 in only 4 years, between 2007 and 2011. We strongly supported the commission and staff when they cut the harvest rate by 40% in 2010, 30% in 2011, another 40% for 2012 and 2013. Actual harvest has declined from over 50,000 fish in both 2000 and 2001 to only 9,700 fish in 2013. The economic impact has also been dramatic, as angler trips have been reduced from about 200,000 per year in 2000 and 2001 to 39,648 in 2013. This year, commissions in both states announced the non-retention policy for sturgeon for 2014. CCA fully supports this decision, which reflects a concern for the health of the sturgeon population as a whole, the depressed state of the legal sized population, and the need to allow time to replenish the number of legal sized fish. Brood sized fish must be given time for an opportunity to survive while they are in the legal sized population. It may take as much as 15 years for a sturgeon to develop into a brood-sized fish once it enters the legal class. As you are aware, and you saw earlier, the population estimates for the legal-sized class are derived from two methods: the historic Washington catch, tag, and recapture method, and the newer Oregon set line method. The department's 2012 estimate for the legal-sized class was 83,400 fish. This compares to the 2009 estimate of 95,000 fish. You saw this earlier on the slide. In 2010, 65,300. In 2011, the estimate of 72,800. Looking at these population estimates, the trend seems to be very positive. But we should take some caution here in this news. There is a very large confidence interval or margin of error around the estimate. The lower confidence limit was 54,700, or minus 52%. Well, I'll move on to, can I go to my summary statement now?
Yep.
In summary, the CCA recommends that the commission continue the non-retention policy for 2014. We also recommend that the staff develop a set of comprehensive criteria to evaluate the overall health of the sturgeon population in order to determine if it is the right time to go back into a retention mode.
Thank you.
Before you go, do you have copies of that?
Yes. I have them. Hand them out. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Butch Smith?
Come forward. Good morning. My name is Harry Barber of CCA Washington. Appreciate the opportunity. I want to pick up a little bit of what Bob said and talk about the Oregon set line estimate. I served on the advisory group that put together the conservation plan for Oregon, and I'm very concerned about any use of that set line population estimate. confidence interval on that estimate for the total population of sturgeon in the river is plus or minus 70%. What Oregon does then, they try to tease out what they think the legal size population estimate is. When I asked Tony Nigro at those meetings, I said, what is the confidence interval? He said, we can't calculate a confidence interval because it's so wide. So I urge extreme caution in using that data. Go to my testimony. I'll try to hit the high points. I'm really concerned about sturgeon bycatch in the fall gillnet fishery. It's a very intensive fishery. And Cindy presented a slide that showed 52 oversized sturgeon taken. And that was just in the observed boats in that fall fishery. If you look at Hollowitz and McHugh's report, which you have a copy of, the actual oversized catch, these approved size sturgeon, was 747 fish in that fall fishery. I think that is of great concern. Those fish are stressed. It's warm water. Molly Webb, the scientist, studied this, and with cortisol levels up, gravid females can reabsorb their eggs and have very poor spawning success. And this may contribute to the low young year numbers that we see. It's a very intensive fishery. Last year there were 754 landings in zones 4 and 5. If they're drifting 6 drifts per landing, that's 10,000 drifts of 1,500-foot gillnets going down through that area in the fall. I mean, I think they're catching oversized sturgeon day after day and probably intercepting the same oversized sturgeon multiple times in the same night. I'd urge the department to look at the condition of those fish, the mortality, signs of stress, are those male or female, and how many are gravid female. When I ask staff those questions, we have no answers around that. I mean, these are the only fish we have. There's no hatchery sturgeon in the Columbia River. Cindy presented a dramatic reduction in predation by sea lions, stellars, on oversize. That's true, but that may not be good news. They may just not be there. A lot of the oversize apparently have gone to the Willamette. You see those numbers. They may have gone there because of sea lions chasing them or because of that extremely intensive gillnet fishery in the fall. Again, 10,000 drifts in 2013. I think we're driving them out of there. I fished the gorge. Last year in the gorge, there were 17 legal fish caught as opposed to 4,000 or 5,000 or even 10,000 in previous years. They just aren't there. The fish are not there. They've been driven out by some factor or another. Bycatch, there's an alternative. If you go to alternative gear, the bycatch of sturgeon can be reduced by well over 90%. Bycatch with alternative gear is about 0.5%, as opposed to the numbers I quoted for what was observed this last year on the oversize. So we applaud the commission commitment to conservation and look forward to full implementation of your policy.
Commissioner Smith.
Thanks. When you're out there, have you seen the sea lions?
Absolutely. I've seen sea lions, two stellars off Rooster Rock, took probably an 8-foot oversize, threw it in the air like a cat would play with a mouse, and then just shredded it and killed it over about a 10 or 15 minute period, ate part of it and left it, and it floated down the river. Uh-huh. You see this again and again. And this is not just a springtime phenomena. I mean, my son is a fisheries biologist. He's up at Hamilton Springs at our Chum Channel. And stellars right now are right off the Chum Channel, which we spent $200,000 for the Fish and Answer Group building. And they're eating the chum, the listed species coming in there, and they're killing oversized sturgeon, regular sturgeon on a daily basis. And it's just, I think it's just criminal.
Thank you both. Thank you. And Mr. Smith?
Madam Chair, Commission, I can't say my name in 3 minutes. My name is Butch Smith. I'm president of the Owako Charter Association. I also am the sitting chairman of the SAM Advisory Subpanel of the Pacific Fisheries Management Council and on some sport boards. I'm here a different take. I think we have some good news on this sturgeon stock. And I think with in lieu of the recent natural events that have taken place on the Columbia River, you can go back in history on the slides and see where we've had flood events and no smelt, and you can see a decline in the sturgeon population. There is a big migrating population of sturgeon. You can look in 09, Mr. Brad James pointed out, you know, a big significant out harvest of sturgeon out of the Columbia River. Same years we've had those floods that were starting. We had three or four years of no smelt, reduced shad populations, anchovies, what have you. I believe now we have some numbers that invoke the adaptive management that you guys, the policy that you adapted, and we could have a small harvest. And what I mean by that, something that would look like last year's season, which on the abundant stock that you were shown here, would mean a 7% harvest rate. Now, I worked on the Oregon conservation sturgeon policy. I sat on that board, and it called as much as 23%. We've modified it down to 19, then we modified it down to 16, and we're at 13. At 7%, you add another layer of conservation. I know it's not going to be an easy task, and there might be some egg on some people's face, but I believe that to close a fisheries before we have the best available science, meaning the latest stock assessments, was maybe a little advised. For my area, which is the estuary, Owaco, Astoria, and those areas, we have no other fisheries going on. So when you close something, you've closed it. When you close something in the Portland area, the Gorge area, you have steelhead, you have spring Chinook, you have summer Chinook, you have walleye. When you close a fisheries in the spring and in the estuary, you've closed a fisheries. Nothing can compare to the May and June sturgeon fisheries down to our local economies. And I know it's a tough task, and I would ask you to reconsider and have a minuscule small fisheries. The number shows and warrants. I was all ready for sitting on the beach when conservation is needed, but we are showing an uptick and a pretty good uptick, and an uptick for the next year. So I just come to you today from our communities. I'm commissioner-elect to the Port of Owaco Port Commission, and we really need to reconsider. I would hope you would reconsider. I agree with the CCA folks, Harry Barber, that to have spawning bed fisheries on sturgeon is ill-advised. And we've been on the record since 1985 in saying that. It's absolutely ridiculous to have a spawning bed fisheries on a fish such as a sturgeon. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. That ends the public input portion of that item. We've just got our